Thank you for the opportunity, everyone, for being here. This is going to be slightly different than most of the talks we heard the other day. I'm going to look at a particular theory or a small class of theories and see how we can rule it out or learn about it from gravitational wave observations. Hopefully no echoes this time. So what is PCGR? The concept is very simple. It starts with Einstein. The idea is that GR is a beautiful mathematical theory. Let's use that mathematical formulation and just add some mathematical structure to it. So have an algebraic extension, so our numbers will no longer be real numbers. They'll be slightly more complicated mathematical objects. It doesn't quite work with complexification, but it does It does work with pseudo-complexification. What that means is we can represent our new numbers, pseudo-complex numbers, as a plus b, or two components, one and z, a combination. The thing that's different from complex numbers is that if we take the second member or generator in our group, it squares to 1 and not to minus 1. So we will have a real part and a pseudo-imaginary part. Together we'll have a pseudo-complex number. What this means is that we now have zero divisors in our theory. So we have numbers that are not, neither of them is zero, but their multiplication is zero. This introduces structure, which we can utilize physically by modifying our action principle and asking that our action, which looks just like GR, varying the action will no longer give us zero, but it will give us some multiplication of one of those zero divisors. So it's kind of an algebraic generalization of the concept of zero, and then we generalize equally our concept of an action and an action variation principle. Put in different terms, we can think of the Einstein equation as having some, not zero on the right-hand side for vacuum solution, but having some multiplicative factor of this zero divisor. So we allow for a little more freedom mathematically. Yes?
Does this modify the light cone or causal structure?
No. It doesn't modify the causal structure. What we can do, solving this, we can find that our solutions look a lot like GR solutions, but in a certain limit of taking the pseudo-imaginary part very small, we can find solutions that are just modifications of the GR solution. So instead of the Schwarzschild solution here, we will have some additional term, this term here coming from the pseudo-imaginary part. Similarly, we can do that for Kerr-like solutions or for Eisenhower-Nostrom solutions, and basically have something that looks a lot like the Kerr metric or regular GR solutions, but with a modification that's here encapsulated in this function psi, or if we want, in some modification of the mass or the apparent mass. So this Schwarzschild black hole or Kerr black hole, from very far away, will look just like a regular Schwarzschild or Kerr black hole. But as we get closer in, there will be some modification which encapsulates our new structure. The interesting thing about behind this theory is that if we take this modification to be large enough, defined by this parameter b, which when large enough we will call some maximal or some critical b, we see that the horizon itself disappears. What does that mean? It means that if we, from far away, just see a regular Schwarzschild metric, we imagine it's a black hole, coming closer, the effective mass that we see gets reduced, it becomes smaller and smaller, and eventually the horizon is no longer there. So this formulation, of course, is very singular at the origin, but this is just a leading term. So you could think of regularizing the singularity, the geometrical singularity, differently, and you don't have a gravitational singularity. You just posit some different mass here, and if this thing were to decay nicely to zero at the origin, then you'd be safe. Okay. So what we have here is the result of what is this critical parameter b for a pseudo-complex Kerr black hole. It depends on the number n, which tells us how strongly we modify or how close to the horizon we modify our theory. And the chi parameter, which is a standard Kerr parameter. For example, for the theory that's n equals 2, which is what people are trying to find with the Event Horizon Telescope, we find that beyond this critical parameter, there will be no horizon. Yes?
Can I think about it as a parameterization of modification of the Kerr metric?
Yes. And one of the nice things about this is that this is a mathematically sound model or a formulation with some added algebra, but eventually it just gives you a modification, which you can think of in many ways. You can capture a lot of phenomenological, physical phenomenology in this mathematical sense. And you have an action principle, you have a theory behind it, you can do a lot of mathematical things that can recover. For example, you can think of it as dark energy, because as you get closer to the black hole, you find that it's kind of pushing you away or expanding rather than being collapsing into a black hole. You can look at the length scale, which is what multiplies the pseudo-imaginary part of your numbers, see what you can do with that. You can think of it as a way to make horizons disappear. You can even play around with the two parameters behind the system to explore different types of extreme compact objects like we saw in Paolo's talk this morning. You can make the light ring disappear, you can make the horizon disappear, you can push your modification as close to the horizon as you want with various combinations of these parameters. So it's a very nice family of models to play around with.
So you have a length scale that I guess that's what's characterizing how far you are from conventional GR?
In a sense, yes.
So when you send this parameter to zero or to infinity, you recover GR?
Yes.
But then what this means is that this length scale means that the deviation from GR, if you have something that doesn't look like a black hole, this is only going to be active at some scale.
Mm-hmm.
So as you get farther from that, so you have to fine tune that scale in order to get something that mimics a black hole.
Yes, of course.
We have black holes at all scales, so you can only.
Not really, right? I mean, if you guarantee that the length scale is small enough that you get it for a 10 to the 8 for the 6 or less, then you're guaranteeing that it looks like a black hole.
What I'm saying is that, I mean, this is a generic property of mm-hmm. all these modified gravities when they come with a length scale, that you get the modifications only for black holes in certain mass ranges. So for instance, if...
You can see if that scale actually translates into a velocity scale or some other scale that you might be more relevant.
If it's a velocity scale, then it's not a length scale. Velocities are dimensions.
But I think it has to be clear on that, because it's not clear. Is this something you're just going to make up, or is this something that appears in your action, this N and B?
First of all, I did not make this up. This is not my model.
Yeah. I thought it and B were dimensionless. So where does the dimensional parameter come from?
Yeah, where did they come from?
In the original formulation, if you follow the Casper paper, which is the one driving here, it goes from the original formulation of the pseudo-complex numbers, which basically has the scale as multiplying the pseudo-imaginary part. And then it rephrases that in terms of these N and B.
So where's the dimensional link?
Right, if you go back, then I guess fundamentally, the C there has units of action. Is that right?
Yeah, this is I basically.
C down one.
Yeah, so this is I, which would make this your unit of action.
Yeah. So I guess
that's where
the scale
would come in.
I guess it boils down to this, like the Planck scale provides a preferred handle. And so the question would be, as we make bigger black holes and smaller black holes and fix C, do their properties change dramatically? That's the question, I guess.
Right.
And do they?
Presumably, yes.
Okay.
But that's not the direction I wanted to take this. I wanted to present this as kind of something you can work around with.
You have two metrics, the real pseudo-imaginary part. So what do gravitons move along? Which metric?
The real one.
The real. But for the record, I was the first to publish.
That's correct.
Pseudo-complex theory, right?
That is correct. Okay. Several tests have been done on this family of metrics. Solecism sets have already ruled out n equals 1, so we're already p- probing the primary space there, and that we expect electromagnetic observations of disks. What would these entail? Well, as standard in electromagnetic observations of black holes, it's really the accretion disk we're looking at. We're looking at the edge of the black hole, or how it would look like from with some telescope. We can employ the extreme mass ratio approximation. That is, we have a black hole and just point particles around it. We would look for matter particles falling in at the ISCO, so when where things would start plunging in, or if you'd like, how inwards the disk can surround our black hole. And depending on our parameters for N and B, we can find different effects for where these ISCOs would be, how deep inside the disk would extend, and we can have pictures. Here on the left is for different Kerr parameters GR, and on the right side, the same Kerr parameters, pseudo-complex GR. And we expect results on for N equals 2, comparing these two models, to come in the spring from the Event Horizon Telescope. Even before that, we can ask, how can gravitational waves probe these family of theories? This should be familiar, also very similar to what Kent just showed. We have our classical Newtonian or post-Newtonian evolution before. We have ring down, not necessarily QNM, but ring down at the late stage, and our unknown, for alternative theories, numerical or EOB stage in between. The post-Newtonian parameter you know, so I'll skip this. So let's apply those, the tests that we can, in the early and the late stages, the ones that do not require fully knowing numerical relativity for an unknown theory to do. We can find the light ring for our theory by solving a couple of equations. Basically, we have frequency, orbital frequency, and radius as parameters. We have equations for it to be a geodesic and for it to be the internal or lighting geodesic. So we have basically this m, the derivative of m, which is directly relatable to our n and b parameters because it describes how the mass changes as we get closer to the black hole. That's the only thing that goes into here. And solving this, we can have a different position of the light ring and a different frequency for what we expect the plunge to be when we go past the light ring for different theories. What is shown here on the left is a GR result. This is from the testing GR paper from 150914. Split for high and low frequencies. So this curve on the left, the Poisson spiral, basically shows you how you'd expect to fit a ring down signal to the late part or the high frequency part of a gravitational wave. And there's a characteristic redundancy between the mass of the final object and the frequency. And this is just Kerr. On the right side, we have the same curves expected for various PCGR configurations. So the red is the same, b equals 0, so we have no modification. This is just GR, and we see it follows basically the same shape of the GR expectation. As we increase the critical parameter up to the point where the horizon disappears, we see that we can constrain or leave less and less room for actual final objects to appear. And we can continue this a bit and have a constraint on how and if we can find final objects to match the data that we have, about 250 hertz for 150914. So we're constraining the mass and the spin basically only based on the final frequency. And that is enough to give us some interesting bounds or hints for bounds about the critical parameter B. Again, what we're using here is what we've seen this morning in Pani's talk and in Vito's paper, that we do not need the full information of the metric to have some idea of what the final frequency would be. The other test we can do is from the early stage, pre-merger. These are, again, the constraints from the testing GR papers of LIGO. This is from 59914 and Boxing Day. Together, we have the bounds published in the O1 summation BBH, O1 BBH catalog paper. And we can see that depending on how we modify our mass with the two parameters B and N, we would have some modification coming in already at the in spiral. So this model, which has been pushed a lot over the last few years as trying to modify the horizon and make the horizon disappear, had an effect already before that, long before that. And we can see how long before by this different n parameters, which basically say at which frequency or at which post-Newtonian order we'd expect to already see the effects of this modification in the in spiral. Calculating the effect, this is basically, what goes into here is basically the orbits in this new metric, or if you want some, the correct modification of Kepler's formula and of the quadruple formula as relevant for this theory. And we'd have this result for n equals 1 to 3 shown here. We have the LIGO bounds from the first observation run on what could be allowed within 90% confidence for the modification or digression from GR of the relevant post-Newtonian parameter. We can see that n equals 1 is now completely ruled out. It was ruled out by solar system tests. Now we can see an independent measure from gravitational waves. N equals 2 can be ruled out fairly confidently already with gravitational waves without having to wait for the Event Horizon Telescope. This is a purely gravitational wave result. And as expected, because we have less information about the higher order PN terms from LIGO yet, there's still space up there.
How do you get these PN terms? Is it assuming that the bodies themselves have this modified mass dispersion? Or it sounded like you're actually assuming that you're somehow doing Keplerian motion around some total mass which has this modified mass
relation. No. You can modify the potential, the potential of the interaction. You'd get a modified Kepler law, which I'll remind you does not assume a single mass. Yeah. And you'll do the.
So at the level of.
You'd modify the quadruple formula.
At the level of the Einstein equations, you modify the whole sort of sequence of PN.
It's a post-Newtonian expansion, so you're not solving directly the Einstein equations or the modified Einstein equations, but you're bringing the modifications in to the interaction and to the orbit and to the power that you're emitting, and just like you could derive the.
I guess that's what I'm asking. So it's the potential that gets shifted, like the Newtonian.
It's the potential and the orbital frequency. And basically the masses and the energy you emit. It's like three things that you change. In conclusion, we can rule out horizonless objects of this form for n equals 1 and 2. But more importantly, we have here some systematic way of looking at theories with different phenomenology and trying to understand which of them obey or match the current information we have on gravitational waves from the pre-merger and from the post-merger stages. We believe we can rule out, for example, n equals 1 and 2 without having to actually produce numerical simulations of pseudo-complex GR for these systems. We suggest that new theories or alternative theories be subject to these tests and to see if they match even those before trying to pursue them with numerical relativity. And we hope this will help to focus in choosing which alternative theories we do want to simulate numerically with, to do more observational experiments in the future. One last word about echoes. This theory, again, makes the horizons go away. It makes the horizons go away in a different way depending on the n parameter. So you can choose which modification you want to introduce, and you can push the modification far or close to where the horizon would be. And if you take n long enough and make the object compact enough, you can think of echoes in this theory as well, and it might be a nice way to, again, play around with how to produce echoes in another model which we have some mathematical grounding for. John.
Yes, when you try to get rid of the horizon, you don't want to get rid of it too much, because it starts looking like a neutron star. And then you can obviously get disagreement with data. So the gray hole has to be sufficiently black. Otherwise, you immediately get into trouble with data. you can do this by testing theories where you try to get rid of the horizon, you increase the frequency of the horizon. Of course, for the black hole, it's infinite. But if you make it finite, you have to make it pretty large, pretty black.
Mm-hmm. And that would allow for that.
That would be true here.
So can we go back to this question about the length scale B? So is it true that for B smaller than the threshold, you guarantee that all black holes below a certain mass, that all objects below a certain mass would look like GR black holes, or is this like more boson star style of things?
Below a certain threshold for B, you'll recover the horizon and other behaviors. I'm not sure which masses that would apply to. Maybe Alex, you know the answer to that?
You just don't want to have it. You want to have a deviation that's so large you don't have a horizon. So we're only able to rule out deviations that get rid of the horizon. There are situations where you have a horizon, but you still have some deviation or something.
Yeah, I think the question is, if you do that for a 10 solar mass object, does it still work for a 10 to the 6 solar mass object?
So in this formulation, you have the parameter kind of hiding in there.
Is that, I worry about this. The action is normally dimensionless. So is that psi dimensionless or? I mean, where does the dimensional parameter come from? I mean, because normally if you use exponentiated action, you'd say it's dimensionless.
Well, you divide by h-bar.
Yeah.
This thing has either the units of h-bar or xb something divided by h-bar.
But let's say, but you're saying gravitationally. I mean, if you put if you said g and c equal to 1, but not h-bar equal to 1, then
yeah,
it's got dimensions?
Yeah, exactly.
Is that the point? Okay. So it gives something in terms of, it's in Planck units.
Yeah, and otherwise it's some number in Planck units.
Right.
Yes.
So what exactly is?
You can think of it as I, only it squares to 1 rather than minus 1. So the number 1, it's a mathematical constant. 1 has 2 roots, and one of them is 1, and the other one is the pseudo-imaginary unit, Z.
And that's the only difference in the field equation?
Yes.
Relative to GR.
Yes, you make all the numbers like this, and you assume that the imaginary part is relatively small with that scale. And then you follow the math. I think Casper, this one and Casper 2012 kind of follow that math.
I think maybe we can, is there any other question? I was going to suggest that you continue the discussion during the break and then meet again at 45. So we lose 5 minutes of conversation. Is that okay? Yes, let's thank all of you.